I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Tassan. Puck it come inside. Chicago flying out again. A good move by Richard. Chicago will keep it in. Shaw shot. Off the boards. Chicago scrambling for a moment. O'Doo in the step. And it's a goal. Koivu on the side. The shot deflected in front of the net. Score. Powerful goal. And Minnesota fights back. Chicago in a little trouble here. It's centered. And score. Tie game. Chicago keeping it in. Score.
Welcome to the On the Ice Radio Show. Good Saturday morning to everybody. Wild hockey underway in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is your full service hockey program for the next 2 hours. Joining us on the line from Chicago, Illinois, is our very own Chad Graff. He, of course, from the TwinCities.com and St. Paul Pioneer Press. Chad, how are you doing after that one?
Good. I'm out here in our Chicago bureau for what feels like our annual springtime trip here to Chicago.
Your bureau.
it was obviously a late one, as all of the fans back home last night know. But you know, I think at the end of the day, the Wild didn't win. They moved to 0-7 in Chicago. It was the type of game that, you know, I think you could look at it a few different ways. You could look at it like, the Wild showed in the second period that they can come back against this team. They showed a lot of good things. Even in the first period, I don't think they were bad. They just defensively had a few huge lapses. And then once again, the Blackhawks did just enough on a fluky play, on a fluky goal to score, and has been fitting with these two teams. The Blackhawks did just a little bit more than the Wild.
Well, it just goes to show, when you're down 1, 2, 3 goals in this league and you work your way all the way back, you know, you're just one bounce away from being back in the same spot you were. There's just a lot of work that has to be done there. But, you know, I think there's a couple things that we're going to be going over in the next couple of hours here. And one of the common themes I heard from the tone of the locker room was that it was actually quite positive. You know, sometimes when they lose in the regular season, it's really tough to get anything out of anybody. It's a very somber situation, right? But yep. It seemed as though it was a lot more upbeat from that perspective. And then I think we heard more than once the Wild players, and we'll hear this in our audio bites throughout the program, but more than once the players said that the Chicago Blackhawks team is opportunistic. And then they also followed that up with saying they didn't play horrible.
Well, that's the frustrating thing about this Blackhawks team, is even when you don't play bad, even when it seems like things go pretty much even. I mean, if we're being honest, the forwards, I think, were pretty equally impressive. The defensemen were pretty equally bad. And the goaltending was pretty equally shaky. And so many things went so similar. The first period, the Blackhawks scored 3 goals. The second period, the Wild scored 3 goals. And then it's just that one little play that, for whatever reason, over the last 6 years, this Blackhawks team has been able to, this is how Tom Towers, our columnist, put it, it always feels like you're doing well against the Blackhawks until the final score happens and you look and you lost by 1 or 2 goals. And that's the frustrating thing that you have to get over with this team, and we'll see whether the Wild can.
Well, it's one of those things where they let you feel good about your game, and then, boom, they pounce on you and finish you. But, you know, one of the things that you asked Mike Yeo at the very beginning of the press conference with him after the game were, you know, the team made some mistakes early, which we saw in the first period, defensively more than anything. And you asked if there's some rust flying off the hinges as well. Here's what he had to say.
It puts the spotlight on a mistake. And we made, just to be clear, we made more than one mistake tonight. And they made more than a couple themselves as well. So, but certainly it puts a spotlight on it, and I know that all our players accept that. That's part of what makes it great. It's the hard parts that make it great. And we fell a little bit short tonight. There was, I thought that we had some look like we had some rust early. Whatever they were able to capitalize on. Very, very pleased with the response we had. Even in the first period, we were down 3-0, but I thought there was still a lot of good things that were going on there. And, just asked the guys to make sure we just stayed with it. And great response to tie it up. But at that point, you just got to find a way to get that next one and make sure that they don't.
There was a situation on the first goal by Brandon Saad where it looked like Suter's stick got popped from his hands, and he kind of looked at the ref, and Ryan Suter's like, hey, how did that get out of my hands? Did you see that?
Yeah, that was a weird play, and I think Suter was asking, why was that not, a holding of my stick?
Correct.
So Saad comes down, and Suter goes to play the body and hits him, and as Saad skates around it, I didn't see exactly what happened. It looked like Saad had one hand on his stick and used the other hand to sort of pop Suter's stick in the air.
And next thing you know, he walks around him and goes shelf, I believe, short side on the waiting Devin Dubnyk, and there wasn't much he could do about that. The first three goals in the first period were tough to defense. And one of the things that you asked Coach Mike Yeo in the post-game press conference is really, what was his take, though? I mean, what was his takeaway from the rust and the mistakes, and what does he do moving forward with that? Cut two.
I thought that there was some. I mean, that they've got players that can make some one-on-one plays, and I think we saw some of that. I think that some of our puck strength in the offensive zone, we weren't quite as strong on the puck. But I think the one-on-one plays aside, there was plays that led up to that. I didn't think that we were pressuring as hard as we normally do, especially on the forecheck and finishing our checks like we normally do. I thought we started to get back into that a little bit more in the second period, started to create a little bit more momentum off that. So something we have to be ready to do right from the start.
But at the end of the day, Chad, I didn't think it was a horrible first period either.
No, that was kind of, there were two sort of amazing takeaways from that first period. While they're down 3-0, 20 minutes in game one of this series. And the two amazing things to me were, one, the Wild didn't play that bad. The shot differential was big time in their favor. At one point, they were out shooting Chicago 10-4. And the other big takeaway that I think says a lot about the chances that the Blackhawks got, and more importantly, the chances that the Wild allowed, was that Devin Dubnyk didn't play that bad in the first period. The fourth goal, we can debate, and I think there's very little debate, actually, of whether that was a good goal or not. But the first three goals, those really weren't. I mean, it's hard to fault Devin Dubnyk when your defense is getting turned around and skated by and allowing the grade A chances that they were. So that's what stuck out to me is, the Wild, I think, have more, grade B, grade C chances in the first period and probably throughout the game. They just allowed such golden grade A chances on, mental mistakes that they almost never make. I don't know if that's the rust. I don't know if that's something about being in Chicago, against playing this team, against being here. Whatever it is, they were mistakes that we don't usually see from the Wild.
Is it me, or does this Wild team make Marian Hossa just look like a superstar for the ages? I mean, he was not very productive, at least as solid as he was in the first period. But, boy, he came out and made a big difference there, both offensively and defensively, in transition, on the puck, great decisions. Neutralized him a little bit later on throughout the game, but from a matchup perspective, I was trying to see what Mike Yeo would do to say, man, how are we going to counteract this Taves, Hossa, and Saad line?
Every series, Taves and Hossa are together against the Wild, and they just, anybody they play against, it's just suffocating.
They carve them.
It's amazing. The job that Hossa does, we all know about Taves, and everything that he's done, the cups, the gold medal, arguably the best player, best complete player in the NHL. Well, Hossa, it blows me away that Hossa doesn't get more love. It's amazing what he's able to do, and I know that he's playing with Taves, and that makes things a lot easier. But what he does on both ends of the ice, and maybe he's just carving the Wild, and I'm only seeing this 10 times a year, but what he's been doing is just phenomenal.
The Wild then went on into the second period, and that Jason Zucker goal early was a big deal there to really stem the tide. Then Mikhail Granlund scores. The Wild score three goals in an 8:09 span of that period. Next thing you know, it's 3-3. You can hear a pin drop in United Center. The momentum that the Wild had really seized in the first period carried over into the second with some incredible offensive zone time, and they're really in position to, man, be a bounce away from creating absolute chaos in that building. something. The interesting thing for the Wild now, the loss they had last night drops them to 2-8 in game ones in its all-time playoff series, those 10 games. Five of those were overtime losses. But I did not realize the win in St. Louis was only their second game one win of any series they had had.
It's crazy, and it's one of the few series that they've held a lead in. Even their opening round series against Colorado, they never led in the series until Nino Niederreiter scores in overtime of Game 7 and they win and move on. So in terms of this franchise, being ahead in a series, or I should say being behind in a series, is, you know, well-charted territory. They've been here many times, including this squad against this team. So I think it'll be interesting to see how the Wild respond, because you know, there's a balance in terms of they're down 1-0. They desperately don't want to go back 2-0. They've been such a good road team. Why let that go to waste? But at the same time, they have to be realistic about the fact that they didn't play that bad other than four big, big mistakes. And it's easy to say that those were four big mistakes and let go any of the big saves that Dubnyk had or any of the fortunate chances that they had. But the Wild had three terrible defensive mistakes in the first period, and then a goal that Devin Dubnyk almost never allows at the end of the second period, after they've come all the way back, after they've erased a 3-0 deficit. And I think that was just the hardest part to take for them.
If anybody remembers the game against San Jose back in early January when they scored in overtime, can't remember the defenseman. Was it Vlasic who shot it from the right side boards there? Up over the top of the circle from about a mile and a half away, that beat Kemper for the game winner in overtime. It almost brought back memories of that. That, though, is a goal puck that the goaltender has to get. Now, it did look to me like it glanced and glazed off a stick on its way in and may have misdirected on him, but still got to find a way to catch that puck, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just the shot, which, you know, I think he needs to catch. It's the situation. It's 58 seconds from this miraculous comeback to put all of the pressure on the home team going into the third period, tied 3-3. It was just a combination of everything. It's a shot that we have never seen him allow as a member of the Wild. As you mentioned, that's a goal the Wild used to allow in December or January, not during this incredible run of the second half. So that was the most frustrating part for the Wild, was just the situation that it came in.
What's amplified, especially in the postseason, is when you allow three goals with defensive lapses that the goaltender can't do much about. He's not allowed to have one leaky goal. And you know, if you heard Mike Milbury on NBC Sports Network between periods, you know, he was all over these goalies. You know, what do you do with these guys? You know, because Ben Bishop had that curious one flip off his glove, Jake Allen style, against Montreal to force overtime in their game. And you know, there's not a lot you can do with them, but you can praise them when they win and say it's not their fault when they lose. It's just pretty much how it goes. Now we're going to be bringing Mark Lazarus on in our next segment from Chicago to get his take on what he's thinking of the team. But one of the things from their perspective, and one of the things I want to talk to Tom Chorsky from Fox Sports North, who's going to join us at 9:45, is about the power play. Wild were number one in the NHL in the playoffs, which is unbelievable because they ended the regular season 27th. Now they're 5 of 15. They have another power play goal. Sometimes it doesn't look pretty, but I thought as though both units looked pretty good with the extra man yesterday.
I would agree for the most part. I mean, this power play has been so much better, at least statistically, in the postseason. But I think there's still some work to be done there. They just seem to, of late, have been able to capitalize and score the chance when they need it, like they did, like Zach Parise did. You know, I think there's lots more for us to get into in the next 2 hours, including the defensive breakdown. Including Thomas Vanek, I thought played a good game for a long time, but then had a costly mistake in not touching that puck in the neutral zone. We'll get more into that, but the power play has been better, but they had two chances in the third period and came up empty on those.
Yeah, one for three, you'll take the 33%, which is right at where they're at during the playoffs, which is just, you know, it's part of it. However, a well-timed power play goal here or there would definitely be very helpful. One of the other things that you mentioned on Zach Parise, he picked up a goal and assist. That's his 18th career multi-point game in the playoffs. You can't say enough about what that guy does. And, I mean, he's the obvious because when you watch him play, you can't miss his work ethic. You know, puck might go to the corner and a guy like Seabrook goes back there or whomever. And somewhere out of nowhere, he's able to find an angle, get a stick, get a hip, a rear end, whatever it is to force a separation and a turnover. He does that better than any other player in the league. And you've watched him up close the entire year for a couple of years now. Are you continually surprised, or do you come to expect, oh, here comes Zach Parise into the corner? He's going to probably find a way to come out of it with it, and you don't even see how he could.
It's amazing, and it's a little bit of both. Between watching him and watching Suter, there are times you feel spoiled just because of, A, and how different it is, because Suter is so effortless and so smooth and so easy that it hardly looks like he's skating or doing anything. And then Zach Parise is the complete opposite, the workhorse who never gives up on a play. And now Parise, consider this, in just what, his third postseason with the Wild, just the very beginning of his third postseason with the Wild, he's already the franchise's postseason leader in points. Yeah. So it didn't take long for him to get there.
Surpassing the great Marian Gaborik, Mr. Groin. How about that?
Ooh, yeah.
Well, and his club is out of the playoffs. Well, segment one's over. We haven't even scratched tip of the surface. Mark Lazarus, Chad, joins us around the bend. He's from, of course, Chicago Sun-Times, and we'll be talking about his take on the Chicago Blackhawks and the Minnesota Wild Series. This is On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Is it me, or does Marian Hossa feel like he's about 80 years old, but still one of the most productive players in the league? It's one of the most frustrating things I've ever seen, Chad Graff. So I thought I'd go into some music that feels like would be his era. Little Pinball Wizard from The Who.
Yeah, absolutely.
That guy just continues to be productive when it matters the most. Mark Lazarus joins us from the Chicago Sun-Times. This is the On the Ice Radio Show. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Quite the game last night. We had the full range of emotions up and down, and really would love to hear your take from what you saw.
You know, it's funny. It was the complete opposite of what we saw in game one against Nashville, where the Predators jumped out to the big lead, and the Hawks came back from 3-0 down to tie it, and then it went on to 18 overtimes or whatever it felt like that night. This was very similar to that. It was kind of weird to see the Hawks do that. And to give up a lead, that's not something they usually do, is give up leads like that. So I think it was a sign that, the Wild sent the message that they're not going to go away quietly in this series, and the Hawks have to learn from that they can't disappear for a period of time like they did against Nashville, because this is a much better team they're playing.
The fourth goal was a weird, or the fourth Blackhawks goal was this play that was discussed over and over in the Wild locker room. From the Chicago perspective, Toivo Teravainen, and I hope I'm saying his name right, but he's the guy who scores it from 56 feet away. What was the perspective from the Chicago locker room on that play? And what has he done this season?
Well, I mean, he got lucky. I mean, Tavo pretty much admitted that. He said, sometimes good things happen when I shoot the puck. And that's basically what he said. He didn't expect it to go in. He was just trying to throw it on net and maybe get a rebound. Sometimes it's like that. They're not always going to be pretty Patrick Kane-style goals. And Teravainen has been a good player for them. I mean, he's 20 years old. He's, the Finnish Patrick Kane, they've called him. I mean, he's got all the skill in the world. But he was a healthy scratch for games 3, 4, 5, and 6 against Nashville. And Joel was just tinkering with the lineup after the loss. He was the odd man out as a rookie. But he's a really good player. All the offensive skill you can imagine. But he's very good defensively, too. He's very responsible for a player his age. So that he's on that fourth line, actually. He's basically in a checking line role. He's been a nice piece for them. I mean, the hype around him was huge. He's like the biggest, most hyped rookie they've had since Kane and Taves. They brought him along slowly. He spent most of the year in the minors. But he's shown flashes, and I think that goal is going to give him a bit more confidence going forward. He's only going to get better.
So we're speaking with Mark Lazarus. He's from Chicago Sun-Times, and of course the Hawks have the belt, the championship belt in the locker room. Can you explain that to our listeners, what's going on with that, and who is the holder of it right now?
You know, I don't know who won. I was in such deadline last night. I don't even know who got it. I would guess it would be Teravainen, frankly. It's just like, the Capitals had their little Abe Lincoln beard, and the Rangers had their Broadway hat. I think every team's got one of these now where they give out some goofy thing after the players, whoever won the last time gives it out to the next game, whoever had the best game or made the biggest play or worked the hardest, that kind of thing. They got the belt. I think they started that in the 2013 year when they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it was that thing was amazing. So here's the interesting thing. I've noticed that it's changed. I mean, it was a pretty decent belt a few years ago.
No, it's ridiculous.
This thing makes the WWE's.
Monstrous.
It does. It makes the WWE's world title belt look like child's play.
It would be too big for Andre the Giant. Absolutely ridiculous.
It would be. But Mark, the thing is, I think it's awesome that they do that. They do it during the regular season. I remember Kopetsky had it one after a Wild game. And, you know, when they handed that thing over to him, it was a big deal in that room. And I just think it's really cool for their togetherness.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Hawks released a video after Scott Darling got the belt in game one against Nashville, that ridiculous 42-save relief effort. And you could see in his eyes how much it meant to a guy,
totally.
Like a young guy, a new guy. You know, I don't know if it means a lot when Marian Hossa gets it. Like, whatever, I'm Marian Hossa, I'm awesome. But when the young guys get it, I think it really does mean a lot when their teammates kind of single them out as having a good game like that. I think it does carry a lot of weight.
The Blackhawks jump out to that 3-0 lead. The Wild were a mess defensively, but then the second period happens, and after a big Devin Dubnyk save, it comes back, and the Wild score three straight goals. What happened for the Blackhawks in that sort of 8-minute and 10-second span or whatever it was, where it goes from being a 3-0 game to a 3-3 game?
Skating. It was bizarre. I mean, as good and as active as they were in the first period, they just stood still there. And the Wild went on the forecheck, and they kept pushing and pushing, and the Hawks were just standing around watching. It's been weird. We've seen a lot of that from the Hawks this year, where they're fantastic for 20 minutes, and they disappear for 20 minutes. You know, they're not that, the consistency hasn't been there all year. They're clearly a team that's capable of winning the Stanley Cup. We know they have the talent, the experience, but they disappear for stretches, and they've been doing it all year long. And you keep hearing, gotta have a 60-minute game, gotta have a 60-minute game. We haven't seen a lot of 60-minute games from this team. And Nicholas Chalmerson said it best. He said, you know, we won today, but that's not going to be a good enough effort against these guys going forward. They have to be better.
These two teams seem to have a lot of respect for their skill and their ability. And the one thing I was pointing out that was amazing is on every puck that was covered by the goaltenders or on any collisions, there was, you know, we came from a series which you probably saw some of, which had just constant stuff. It was, and nothing, you know.
That's the Blues.
Yeah. But I mean, it's so different and so refreshing to watch. I mean, I like that too. Obviously, I'm old school. But there's an absolute get it done between the lines. We're going to play the game the right way, and these two teams seem to have a lot of mutual respect for each other's game in that category. Can you talk about that dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, most Hawks rivalries, I mean, other than the Blues and Vancouver before that, which were really kind of blood feuds, you know, the Hawks don't play that kind of game, so the rivalries don't build up that much hate because,
yeah.
You know, the Hawks came in the last 2 years. They met in the conference final, but that's two great teams going at it, and there's a lot of respect there. Against the Bruins, it was like that. You know, frankly, I'd like to see a little bit more than this year. I mean, you know, you think about the old North Stars, Blackhawks
totally.
Rivalry, old Norris, right? That was one of the meanest, nastiest, ugliest rivalries ever. It was fantastic. And there's none of that, even though usually you play a team in the playoffs every single year. Some of that would build up, but it's just not like that. These teams don't play that style of hockey.
You know, I went down a rabbit hole, if I could jump in on this for a second, Mark, and I pulled up on YouTube an old North Star Blackhawk brawl that was about 17 minutes. I should have remembered what it was titled. It was at the Met Center. I mean, nothing really was going on, but there's one thing that I realized. I didn't notice at the time, but whenever Al Secord got in a fight, he'd usually be on the ice and he'd wrap you up, and it would take the refs like 5 minutes to separate guys. Why did he do that?
I don't know, but that's the way hockey was back then, especially in the Norris division. It was great.
It was awesome.
I mean, it was terrible. It's fun in hindsight. It was probably terrible at the time.
It was so bad. It was good though, right? It was so bad.
The games were so, there was so much hate. There was so much anger there. I mean, it kind of really fueled that. I mean, the Wild Hawks is, the last 2 years has been pretty boring. At least last night's game was exciting, but the Wild played that kind of slow, dull, you know, defensive style of hockey, which doesn't lend itself to great theater to begin with. And then there's no hate there, so you hope that there's more games like last night where the games are they're flying up and down the ice and playing a good, tight game, because you're never going to have the extracurriculars in this rivalry. The two teams, the personnel on each team, other than Matt Cook and maybe Daniel Carcillo, who's not playing on the Hawks, there's not guys that do anything like that to really fuel that.
a lot of the playoff games, it's funny, have felt just like glorified bigger regular season games. I wanted to ask you, though, Brad Richards, who is, of course, the big guy that comes in over the summer. What has he done, and how has he fit? He assisted on the Patrick Kane goal in his first season, what, 12 goals, 25 assists in 76 games. What has Brad Richards done in his first season?
You know, he's had an up-and-down year. He really stabilized things for Patrick Kane. I mean, Kane was having his best season of his career because he finally had a center. Because Kane doesn't play with Jonathan Toews. They like to keep them separate to balance out the lines. But Kane, I think, had like 11 or 12 centers over the last 3 years. Now he finally has a center in Brad Richards. But at the same time, you know, Richards is 34, 35 years old. He's lost a bit of a step. We saw last year in the playoffs with the Rangers, he was on the fourth line by the end of the year, and they bought him out because he just didn't have the speed to keep up. But, man, you saw him waltz right through Marco Scandella last night. He looked pretty fast all of a sudden. You know, he seems to have found an extra gear right now in the playoffs. He looked good against Nashville. After a pretty tough second half of the regular season, he picked things up in March and April. And he looked really good yesterday. I mean, if he can get that kind of speed, if he can play at that level, it makes the Hawks so much more dangerous because all of a sudden they have two or three real scoring lines. And it's not just Patrick Kane trying to do things by himself.
Speaking of the depth, and Patrick Kane and not having to be able to do things by himself, and Brad Richards, of course, having the Conn Smythe Trophy, the intangibles, I guess, that come into play. Just another guy that's won a cup on a team that's loaded full of cup finalists. Do you feel as though there's a level of, you know, knowing how and when to get better and improve and increase their game that this team can bring? I mean, it's been a while since a couple of years since they've won a cup, but this is by and large the same group. Do you think they're starting to really have that belief of saying, you know, we're more than just a contender here?
Oh, no question. I think they felt like that all season, even though when they were muddling through. I mean, we hate to use that term, but we use it all the time here. They can flip the switch. They
sure
do it every single year. I mean, they were bad at the end of last regular season, and they finished one goal away from the Stanley Cup final. They were really bad at the end of this year, and we knew they'd be fine. I mean, I think 17 of the 20 guys that dressed in game one against Nashville had won a Stanley Cup. You can't replace that kind of experience. There's nothing you can do. They have three Conn Smythe winners in Toews, Kane, and Brad Richards. They have a Stanley Cup winning goalie who should have won the Conn Smythe in 2013, and Patrick Kane would probably tell you that. I mean, the depth and the experience, you know, I think yesterday was Patrick Kane's 100th playoff game. Marian Hossa has played like 180 playoff games. Brad Richards has played a ton of playoff games. You can't replicate that. And I think in hockey, more than any other sport, that experience matters because the games are so tense and the stakes are so high that it makes a huge difference. And you saw that against Nashville. Nashville could have won any of those games, but the Hawks always seem to pull out the overtime ones because they've been there before. You've seen these guys do it time and time again, and they never get worried. They never seem to panic. Even when things are terrible in the regular season, they're like, yeah, we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's almost like they're slippery and they just slide right on through. Chad, go ahead.
For whatever reason, it seems like Corey Crawford always gets knocked, and especially, you know, even for a goalie who's won a Stanley Cup, and then after the first round series, of course, more of it. How do you think he played last night, and especially in the third period when the Wild were buzzing a little bit?
You know, Corey Crawford will never get the respect he deserves. My favorite story, I was October of 2013, like 3 months removed from the Hawks winning the Stanley Cup. I'm doing a radio spot in Toronto. In Toronto, where they know hockey pretty well. And the guy legitimately, not tongue-in-cheek, asked me, can the Hawks win the Stanley Cup with Corey Crawford? And I just stood there in dumbfounded silence. I'm like, they just did. And he goes, yeah, but can they do it again? I mean, I don't know what the guy has to do. He was hung out to dry in that first round series and got pulled and didn't do himself any favors. And he wasn't very good in the second period yesterday. There's no doubt about that. He needs to be better. He's not on top of his game right now. But you saw him in the third period, that toe save he made on,
Vanek.
I want to say Granlund.
It was Vanek, I think, down low.
Or Dumba, on Dumba. He made the save on Dumba. He made a couple of point-blank stops right in front. I mean, when it matters most, Crawford always seems to come through. And maybe if he had a French-sounding last name, people would like him more. I don't know what he has to do. His numbers are great. His playoff record is great. And you know, the thing about Corey Crawford, he just doesn't care. And that's probably to his advantage. He doesn't care what people think of him. It took him years to win over Chicago. He won a Stanley Cup in Chicago, and people here were still doubting him last year. So it's just going to be how it is for him. He's not a guy who had the pedigree. He had to work his way up from the minors. Spent like 5 years in the minors. He's kind of like Devin Dubnyk, where he didn't have that track record. He wasn't like a top guy. But he worked his way up, and he's been nothing but solid for the Hawks.
Do you know what I think it is, Mark? I think it's that this is my take on why it's been so hard for him to win people over from the hockey world, including, you know, probably even locally. He's not cat-like. You know, so he doesn't have this like, I get from point A to point B, just boom, boom, you know, and he doesn't dazzle you with what appears to be just an okay athletic ability. Maybe it's great, but it doesn't look that way. Add to that he's got a real kind of laissez-faire attitude. I am who I am, and I'm not out to impress you. He's not a self-promoter type of guy. And I think what happens is the perspective is this guy is just easy to write off. However, what lives and resides deep inside Corey Crawford is a highly competitive player.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's also, you know, people think he's, you know, like a system quarterback in football. Well, look at the guys playing in front of him. Yeah, well, look at the guys playing in front of him. Look at the guy playing behind him. He's bailing them out, but the defense keeps faltering. You know, people always equate him to Chris Osgood. Well, Chris Osgood won a couple of Stanley Cups. If Corey Crawford has a Chris Osgood-like career, he'll be all right with that.
I think I would, too. Mark, we appreciate your joining the show, and if this thing extends beyond four games, and, you know, by all intent, you know, Keith Jones said it's going seven, so we would love to have you on next week if you have time. Good, so we're all in agreement.
Please forgive this scratchy voice right now. I'm a little under the weather.
I love the Rod Stewart angle to the show. It's perfect, man. All right, Mark, thanks. You take care. When we come back, Chad and I will continue our discussions. Take your calls at 651-989-9105. On the Ice Radio continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Dangerous players, a lot of skill over there, and if you make a mistake, and most of the time it ends up in the back of the net. That's how they play, and they've always done that. It sucks, but you know, you gotta leave it behind you. You win the game, you gotta forget about it. We lost the game, we gotta forget about it too. So just prepare for the next game on Sunday and be better.
That was Ryan Suter post-game from the Wild's 4-3 loss to Chicago Blackhawks in game one of their second-round playoff series. Don't worry, Wild faithful. All's not lost. Minnesota only 2-8 in their game ones of the 10 series that they've played in the National Hockey League playoffs so far. But really, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about was the tone of the team. And it wasn't... I mean, obviously, what are they going to say? They're not going to be jumping up and down, but I think we've seen way worse scenarios as far as at least how they felt about the game, their effort, even including, Chad, those first three goals that were scored in the first period. I think overall the takeaway from this club was, you know, if we had the metrics on offensive zone time, it was absolutely not even close.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're starting to see a more experienced, a more mature hockey team, a team that has been in these situations, that has come back from, you know, a 2-0 deficit in a series, that has come back from a 3-2 deficit in a series, a team that has made it too often accustomed to lose game one. So this is nothing new for this Wild team, and I think that's what we're seeing, is that they've been here before. They know, you know, how quickly you have to just leave whatever happened in the game, be it a win or a loss, and I hate even saying it because I almost roll my eyes when players say it. It's so cliche at this point, but that's what the playoffs are. It's game off day, game off day, game off day. And if you're not ready to, you know, leave the game behind and to move on, then you're going to get stuck early in the next game. And that's what the Wild are trying to be wary of.
We're going to be joined by FSN's Tom Chorsky a little bit later on in the next segment. And one of the things I want to ask him was, it felt from the opening faceoff to really the end of the game that the Wild speed is going to be an issue for the Blackhawks. Did you feel the same way, and was that discussed downstairs?
Perhaps, but I think that Chicago speed can also be, a big disadvantage. Whoever has the puck looks really fast in this series. One of Chicago's goals came on an offensive zone drop for the Wild. 7 seconds later, with Brad Richards and Patrick Kane, it turned into a goal going the other way. It just shows how valuable possession is in this series. And you mentioned, you know, that the Wild had good offensive zone time. And that, to me, is the key against this team, because if you give Chicago the puck, if you give them chances, they're going to turn it into goals. Maybe it won't be as many goals as, you know, if the Wild's defense isn't as bad as it was in the first period. But they're going to get their share. They're going to get some goals. Speed, I think, is the big factor in this whole series, but in game one, they both looked very fast to me.
Well, I agree with you. I guess my idea was, and you know, you heard Pierre McGuire talking a lot about that on the broadcast, you know, that how the game had really been taken away from the Chicago Blackhawks, and that was the Wild in possession of the puck, regrouping, handling the puck, moving up ice, getting in deep, winning the battles, the one-on-one battles, which they maybe didn't win as many of in the first period. Mike Yeo was pretty clear about that. We'll hear from him later on in the program on that topic as well. But because Minnesota was on the puck so often, it just felt to me like they got from point A, tops of their circles, to the tops of the circles in the Chicago zone a lot quicker. It just felt that way. How about that stanchion, Karam? Boy, it nearly haunted the Hawks. Did you go right there? I was like, oh, that would have been too good.
That was the lead to my story. As that happened, you have got to be kidding. Finally, a chance for retribution. It would have been such a perfect storyline. It would have been outstanding. And before that, my colleague Tom Powers, the Pioneer Press, was going around and asking players what they remembered from that game six. And it was interesting to hear from both sides. In the Blackhawks room, it was like, oh yeah, that great goal from Patrick Kane. It wasn't, oh, that crazy bounce that landed on Kane's stick and then provided, you know, the foreshadow of that goal. And then in the Wild locker room, it was, oh my God, that took me 6 months to get over it. I'm not sure I'm over that yet. So it was fascinating to hear both sides of it. But that, I mean, it would have been so amazing. And so that play happens and the puck hits the stanchion. This is like 2 minutes and 10 seconds left. Comes out to me, Kyle Granlund. This is as the Wild are controlling. I think it's right before they pull their goalie. Granlund sends a puck over to Pominville, but the puck was rolling. It was bouncing. It was hard to hit, and even though Pominville had an open net, the puck was just bouncing too much. He flubbed a bit on the shot, and the Wild lose that game. But let me ask you something. As I say Granlund, I saw about 1,000 tweets last night about Doc Emrick mispronouncing Mikhail Granlund. Did you hear that? Did you see any of that chatter?
Okay, it was so funny because because I wanted to be the broadcast journalist, I stayed straight focused on the monitor, you know? Mm-hmm. And I chose not to get into the Twitterverse because then I get into the rabbit hole and then it's just not a good thing and I miss the game, right? Because I don't multitask. I'm a drummer, but not that way with Twitter. Okay, so I'm hearing him say Granlund the whole time. And I go, oh boy, I can hear the piling on right now. I'm sure everybody is just jumping all over Doc for this one. And then I got to thinking, you know what, maybe there is, you know, I was going to try and pull out the NHL pronunciation guide, but I wasn't at home at the time and take a look to say maybe we're butchering the name and maybe the Doc is such a great pro that he's getting it. But here's the funny part. Then when Pierre McGuire would say it, he would say Michael Granlund.
Right.
So you had both names kind of sliced and diced. That's funny. How active was that out there for you on the pronunciation?
Every single person I saw, people that, you know, I don't even follow for Wild stuff or hockey stuff, were tweeting about it. Everybody, Granlund, Granlund, Granlund. So part of me was hoping that Granlund would score, you know, the game-tying goal late just to see Twitter explode about people upset over the pronunciation.
Yeah, even though he tied it, right? Who cares about the pronunciation? Let it go. So that's why I literally knew that was going to be out there. I couldn't go there because, you know, whatever. I mean, every once in a while, you know, that might be the appropriate pronunciation for that name from the language and that we've just, you know, Minnesota-sized it too. Yeah, I mean, it's very possible. That's just like, you know, is it Mike Medano? If you go to Canada, it's Mike Medano.
Yeah, it's his name everybody's had issues with, and anytime there's an NBC game or a national game, it seems like people are upset about that. But it was funny to see. And it was also, you know, the amazing thing with Tampa-Montreal going to overtime, everybody was complaining because I don't know how it worked, but some faction of the state could not get the game either because they didn't have NHL Network or for whatever reason. They couldn't even, and if that was the case, then lucky them, because I don't think many Wild fans want to
period. It was funny, because I was going to ask you about that, too, what kind of feedback you were getting. Basically, what happened was, what people weren't realizing is that on NBC Sports Network, they have the ability to send the Chicago feed and the Minnesota feed the games. Now, I don't know if that included for outstate Minnesota as well. if they were part of that or if it was just to the Metro or however it worked. But as you know, these face-offs for these 8:30 games are actually, let's say, 8:39. 8:42.
8:45.
Yeah, you know, it's not 8:30. So, meanwhile, you've got the Lightning clinging to the 1-0 lead, just an awful goal scored by Bishop. And I knew exactly what was coming as far as the feed's concerned because we're in this business. I laughed out loud. I go, oh, it's going to be Armageddon. NBC, Care 11, whatever it is, they're all just going to get just crushed with with people looking for the game. And, it literally flipped right over as the lights were coming up after the national anthem and, the getting ready to drop the puck. So.
So you had it, no problem?
Yeah, absolutely no problem. But I was chuckling the whole way because I knew it was coming because you just knew. And if you really were really worried about it, all you needed to do was go on to NHL.com and see that the game was still in pregame mode until, poof, it popped on and then it was out of pregame mode. So a little bit of a trick for everybody to know, but I'm sure you had a lot of entertainment out there.
It was something, and the punchline wrote itself after the first period. I almost never start writing my story after the first period because the game's not even halfway over, so much changes, but 3-0, the way that game was going, I was like, oh, well, I might as well just try to get some work done at this first intermission, so I'm writing my story, and the punchlines were so easy about how lucky the fans were that they didn't have to watch that first period, and sure enough, the first goal happens, and I'm thinking to myself, I could still get away with this story. The second goal happens, I might have to be more creative, work around this. The third goal happens, well, all right, so much for working ahead. I'm back to square one.
Select all, delete. Right?
Exactly.
That is beautiful. Excited to have Tom Chorsky on the line. He's from Fox Sports North. He is en route to Chicago. Great story there. Be sure to check it out. Around the Bend on the Ice Radio Show continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
I don't know. I felt like it wasn't really that bad, period. Even they're a really opportunistic team, and they took advantage for those chances. And obviously, we battled back, but it was enough to.
Indeed, they did battle back. That, of course, was Mikhail Granlund. Of course, we had the Granlund discussion and the Twitterverse exploding over that with the legendary Doc Emmerich, who always calls a fantastic hockey game. Joining us now is Fox Sports North's and also known as Mr. Hockey Logic, Tom Chorsky. Good afternoon, or good morning to you.
Hey, good morning.
So are you en route right now to Chi-Town as we speak?
Yeah, he actually caught me. We kind of got a start. I wanted to be on the road while we were talking, and we're going through a tunnel. We're just going through the 94 tunnel, getting out of Dodge here. But I was hoping I wouldn't get disconnected.
Oh wow! So we are in the way early stages here. So you're going to Chicago. Your son has is this Brett, who's 14?
Yes.
Brett's 14th birthday. He's a huge Hawks, not Hawks, but Patrick Kane fan. And how cool is it that you can take him there for that special day?
You know, he's been asking for a while now, hey, could we ever go to a game down in Chicago? And it just seemed like the right time with the Wild in the playoffs, taking him on in round two. And I had a connection down in Chicago, and I assured my Chicago connection that, you know, I may not be rooting for the Hawks, but my son my son will be. So I won't root against him from the seats that they got us, but my son will be rooting for him. And like you said, he really likes the Wild, and at the end of the day, he won't be mad if the Wild win, because then he gets to go to the third round with them. But he is a big, you know, he's a big can bandwagoner.
Well, Brett Chorsky can't lose. It's that simple, right?
Right. He is in kind of a win-win situation. So it should be good, though. Yeah, I think he'll be pretty blown away by the, you know, starting with the national anthem and then all the way through.
With Mr. Corneliusson, unbelievable. So your takes on the game last night, I personally, as the players, have all said that they didn't feel like they were played horrible in the first period and that they really played pretty well. From your perspective, where did you see the whole body of work from last night?
Well, you know, I think there were a lot of positives, and it started off very negative. I think, obviously, with Chicago taking that quick lead, you know, but I did sense that Minnesota was hanging in there and didn't completely lose their composure. I even kind of tweeted about it and and I just heard you say you weren't in the Twitter sphere last night, but, you know, I think it showed a lot that this team has matured emotionally and psychologically for them to battle back. And, you know, I think a lot of credit goes to Zach Parise for you know, instigating that and being the fire starter there. And, you know, there were some mistakes. You know, the first goal right away, Versteeg did, or Saad did grab Suter's stick, and you see him complain afterwards.
Yep.
You know, to me, it was almost like a quick lesson in, you know, hey, quit your crying. This is big boy hockey, and I'm not slamming Ryan Suter. I'm saying that he almost got caught off guard that this is how it was going to be called. And we've talked about it on the television network that each series and sometimes each game will be refereed a little bit different, and you have to kind of be in tune in how it's going to go. And so they got caught a little bit on that one, but, you know, they did battle back, and they scored some gritty goals. They got a power play goal. On the negative again, you know, Patrick Kane gets going. Looks like a couple of defensemen for the Wild got tiptoed around a little bit. But then Granlund scores. That's huge. Zucker gets going. And obviously Zach Parise, you know, kind of was himself, but he got going early in this series.
What do you make of the first period? Do you chalk that up to rust? Is that Chicago's great forwards? Is that just a rare mental lapse from the Wild defensively on some of those plays? How do you look at the first period?
Well, I think Chicago was really ready, and you know, maybe it was just these little fortuitous plays that worked in their favor. I know Mike Yeo in the post game presser mentioned he thought they looked a little rusty, and I don't know if they were rusty. They weren't off for that long, and I just think it was just kind of the way the puck bounced for them, and again the Hawks had some guys, some playmakers that made plays, and you know, with Kane and with Richards and even Saad made a play, and their playmakers were making plays early. And we kind of had to settle back down, let the dust settle, and go back to work. And that's what the Wild did.
We're speaking with Tom Chorsky. This is On the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. He is en route to Chicago, Illinois right now to take in game two of the series. And Tom, one of the things that always stands out, and I think everybody knows this, in Chicago, after that anthem and the way that building is, there's just a lot of energy. I mean, and sometimes it can, you know, when you're a road player, that's got to help you too. I mean, how could you not like that? You know, I think of Ottawa is an amazing place to watch after the anthem. In Montreal, Chicago, those three I think of all the time. But that, do you think it's overblown that the Hawks get that 10-minute burst, you know, where they're always out of the box? It seems like it. But it would seem as a visiting player, you're totally ready for that and you're digging it. What's your take on that as a player in that situation?
Yeah, I can speak from experience. It was the old Chicago Stadium, which was old but just as festive. And, you know, I think if you played in a sleepy market, you know, at one point I played for the Islanders, and if you were playing for the New York Islanders, which had a good fan base, but the atmosphere in Long Island, in Uniondale, was not that of Chicago, I always thought it was great. And same thing if I went up to Canada, and we were playing up in Canada, where obviously the games are an event, and the fans are so knowledgeable. And so I always got a rise out of it, and I would imagine most players do. Now, if you're a young player and you haven't really experienced it, or if you're a young player and now it's playoffs and not regular season, and the lights are a little brighter and the fire's turned up a little bit, and all of a sudden you can catch yourself maybe being, you know, full of butterflies and a little nervous. But now, that said, I do think Chicago does get a rise out of it themselves. It certainly has them ready to go. And when I played, their team was not so high flying, and I guess they had a Monty and they had Jeremy Roenick, but they also had a slew of heavy hitters, and their strategy was to spend the first 10 minutes trying to, you know, staple you to the boards and take your head off. So, you know, the warning to me, I still remember as a younger player, was, hey, buckle up. It's going to be a rodeo here for about 10 minutes. And then if you could, you know, rope-a-dope them a little bit and you know, bend but not break, and survive that first 10 minutes and settle into a hockey game. That was the strategy as an opponent.
What are you looking forward to in game two, both in terms of being there, but also in terms of what you expect to see from the Wild on the ice?
Yeah, well, you know, the playoffs is all about momentum. And, you know, the best medicine is a short memory, both when you win and when you lose. And the Wild have seemed to be pretty good at it. You know, if you win the game, sometimes you it's a sigh of relief. You know, they won last night. They potentially would have that sigh of relief that, hey, we're going to get our split at worst. Boy, are we in good shape now. We've taken back home ice advantage. We've got the momentum. And then as soon as you let your guard down just a notch, and I think, you know, St. Louis played that card in the first round, all of a sudden they come back, they win game two at their barn, and it's tied, and you're no better off. You're back to square one. And in reality, the momentum is not in the opponent's favor, but you're going back, you know, in round one, Minnesota was going back home, but they had lost game two. So St. Louis is probably emotionally feeling pretty good. And they carried some momentum back to game three in Minnesota. Now, fortunately, Minnesota came out on fire. They were ready to go, and they did a number on them and shut them out. First shutout in the 2015 playoffs. So it's such a, you know, what I will be watching for is, can Minnesota take back the momentum early in the game? And a lot of it will be, you know, who scores first, who's got zone time in the offensive zone, and who seems to be taking away time and space and jumping on the other team. I think that will tell a lot. And then I think you keep an eye on both goalies. I felt like, you know, Devin Dubnyk was not blamed for any of the goals except for that fourth one, and we can talk about that one after if you want. But more so than, you know, Dubnyk looking shaky, I thought Crawford looked shaky once the Wild got going last night. So that'll be the other thing, is to see which goaltender, or to see if the Wild score first, or Pepper and Crawford, how is he looking?
Well, and to the point on the Corey Crawford thing, I was watching for too, Tom, and I felt the same way. Once he was, he saw a lot of work in really the first two periods, and I thought the Hawks blocked some shots in the third and kept the Wild at bay a little bit more, but his recovery stuff and his five hole, it has been pretty exposed, at least against Nashville, and then again here in yesterday's game, if you recall those goals. But I remember Nashville going up top on him at will in those games, and we haven't really seen Minnesota do that. Do they get a book on the goaltenders and say, you know what, or do you just throw it on net and look for rebounds and hope to punch it home?
Oh, I think they definitely get a book on him. You know, the team and in particular, you know, Bob Mason, the goaltender coach, would go back and look at some video, and they're watching him during round one to see what kind of the current trends are. If, you know, if they are just throwing pucks at him, that might be indeed the strategy. You know, I think in this day and age, if you fire pucks at an NHL goaltender, typically as a butterfly goaltender these days, I think shots from almost, you know, anywhere, and in some cases bad angles, really can result in scoring chances if the non-puck carriers, if the other guys are headed to the front of the net, headed to the slot area, because, you know, goaltenders, if you think about it in practice and in warm-ups, they're not seeing high hard shots or low hard shots from bad angles. And even, you know, in practice, you typically don't do that. The drills are run, and they will work on it, at, you know, after practice at times, but drills are typically run at all levels of hockey for goalies just to get shots from the center of the rink. And usually if it's practice, you might not be headhunting. And so, you know, if you whistle a couple high from a bad angle, or you shoot low and they're butterflying down and they're having a more difficult time controlling that rebound from a bad angle low, and they're dropping down into that butterfly, and someone's going to the front of the net, and it comes off the pad or off the paddle and is laying 5-10 feet out in the slot, you're going to get a good scoring chance. So I don't know what the book is on Crawford right now, but yes, as you mentioned, the Predators were sailing him over his shoulder a few times.
Chad?
Patrick Kane scores last night. What did your son make of his performance, and how happy is he that he's back from injury?
Yeah, he was monitoring that injury pretty closely, and he was fired up when they started announcing that he's back on the ice, and it looks like he'll be back in time, you know, for round one and whatnot. And when they scored the goal, we weren't sure who scored it, because it was a pass across the offensive zone. It happened so fast. And right away, Brett said, "Oh yeah, my boy, there's Kaner. Let's go, boys." And he's, you know, he's running around, and my wife and I were watching. We were like, "That wasn't Kane, no, that was, you know," we weren't sure, but it happened so fast we couldn't discern who it was. And he goes, "Wait, you think I'm wrong? Watch. You'll see. And then they post celebration, and sure enough, it was a one-timer. He does find ways to get the puck in the back of the net, you know, and he is one of those players that, you know, he's not like Zach Parise, where his feet are always moving and he's always on the puck and he's in the corners. He is afforded, you know, his style of play. He likes to have the puck, but he likes to dish it off and get rid of it too, and he finds these real open areas. And that's the hard part about covering him, because he's not in your face. He's elusive, and he circles back deep into the defensive zone when they're regrouping. And another thing he likes to do is, if the Hawks sense that you're going to change on the fly and you dump it in, but if it doesn't get all the way deep into that zone, he'll go to the far side, you know, where he's away from the benches, and he's standing right at the blue line, and they'll whistle it up to him, fire that puck right up to him. He steps over the blue line, and by that time, his line mates are all going to the net, and he comes across the zone, and you can just feel everyone tense up, because you just don't know what he's going to do. And so often, he creates a scoring chance or scores a goal.
Tom Chorsky, great stuff. You drive safe. We're out of time on this segment. Would love to have you join us in studio next week if you have some time.
Absolutely. I'd love to come in, and I told you earlier, you're doing an awesome job, and I love listening to you guys.
Thank you very much, Tom. Enjoy the game. Hello to Brett, and drive safe.
We will. Weather's fine.
Perfect. Thank you very much once again. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to have special guest Rob Tykowski from the Edmonds, and then also don't forget Phil Pritchard, keeper of the Stanley Cup. We've got a great interview with him that I think every hockey fan needs to hear about Lord Stanley's Cup, his travels with it, and how that all came about. On the Ice Radio Show continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.